Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Yes, indeed. Let's get started here. Tonight we have a very interesting guest with us. Please welcome to the show, Joanne Clarkson.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Many of us, when we grew up in situations that involved perhaps not a lot to do except to explore our immediate environments. Some of us grew up out in the country, others grew up in perhaps suburbia, maybe even in the middle of a large city, but regardless, as a young child, most of us had to try to entertain ourselves and or find things to do. My guest this evening, psychic medium Joanne Clarkson, has read palms and tarot cards and performed mediumship readings since a very young age. She was taught by her grandmother, who was a professional psychic. Throughout her life as a wife, mother, teacher, librarian, and finally a hospice nurse, she has always continued with her intuitive practices, believing that the messages brought to her by those who have passed on are an important part of her loving service to others. Joanne and I talked a little bit also about what it's like when one gets perhaps a bit addicted to psychic readings, and that you should find to be very, very interesting. We had a lot to talk about this evening, so sit back and grab somebody near you as we go into the world of psychic mediumship. Please welcome to the show this evening my special guest, Joanne Clarkson. Well, good evening, Joanne, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Well, hi, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
Oh, so good to see you again. My goodness, I met Joanne out in Washington at a ghost conference a few months back, and I had the privilege of sitting with her on stage during an author's panel to talk about what it was like being an author and trying to give all our tips and tips of the trade to all those newbies out there, well, just anxious to get their first book out there. So hopefully, Joanne, hopefully we together set the record straight. But anyway, so today is going to be a fun day with Joanne because she has a variety of things under her belt, and we're going to get right at it and move this along. So as everybody knows, foundation-wise on my shows, I always like to start with where it all began with you, because I think most people are actually quite interested in wanting to know how you became you. So go back as far as you can remember, okay, Joanne? And let's start there.
Well, I guess I was fortunate to grow up in a family where nobody thought ghosts or fortunes or anything was particularly weird. My grandmother and her three sisters immigrated from Sweden. And you don't think of Sweden as being a poor country, but they were poor. They were farmers, and they came to the United States to meet rich, handsome husbands, which, of course, didn't happen. And so they lived in a boarding house and took in laundry, which was no one's favorite. But their father was a cabinet maker, but he called himself a spiritualist. And he had weird experiences, and all the girls had strange experiences when they were young. Well, Aunt Ruth met some gypsies that lived in the alley in the back of the boarding house, and they taught her to tell fortunes with playing cards. And she taught her sisters. And my grandma, whose name was Esther, was the one that really, for some reason, this really clicked with her, and she was very good at it. And grandma could go places in her head that were just incredible. Her difficult part was then she couldn't always get back. And so she ended up having kind of a difficult life. And she also saw a lot of things that weren't pleasant. And people don't want to know that. So she kind of struggled with her vocation. And she was very superstitious. But she eventually did get married and had my mother, who had me. And so when I was a little girl, at holidays, birthdays, Christmas, Thanksgiving, everybody would sit around and tell everybody else's fortune. And I didn't know that all families didn't do that. So that was like a normal thing. So when I was a very little child, you know, 5, 6, 7, I could tell fortunes with playing cards. I knew what the cards meant. I knew if you drew that was, you know, so it was just kind of what we all did. And actually my father's side of the family was Catholic. And when my mother married him, she had to be a Catholic too. So I went to the Catholic school, and to me, that was never weird either. I knew there were spirits around me. And so when my second grade teacher said, we all have a guardian angel, didn't faze me. I immediately saw my guardian angel over my left shoulder. That was just a nice thing. And I liked the Catholic tradition of angels and saints and all that, you know, strange to other people, just ordinary life to me. And so my ability to kind of see the other side and live there wasn't challenged the way a lot of people experienced it when they were young. And it was a great blessing to me that it was also always presented to me as love. When you tell someone's fortune, you're telling it's in a loving way. You're helping them. You're blessing them. So I kind of carried that through. Well, when I became a teenager, by that time, the next generation of us, all the cousins, weren't really nearly as into the fortune telling. They were onto other things. In fact, I'm the only one that really continued with it. But all the sisters and whatnot told with playing cards and told cards. And I'm an Aquarian. And one of our main things is we got to be original, Kelly. We got to do something nobody else can do. So when I was 12, I went to the public library. And I don't exactly remember why I chose palmistry. I think I looked at all the kind of the spiritual section to see what was possible besides card reading. And I thought palmistry was interesting. So I read the 2 or 3 volumes in my local little public library, and then I took the bus down to the big downtown Seattle library and got even more books, and I taught myself to read palms when I was a teenager. And palmistry is fun because you don't have to have anything. You can tell read somebody's palm that's sitting next to you on the bus or anywhere. And palmistry kind of discovers people's, you know, gifts and talents. And also at this point in my life, as grandma entered that time in her 60s and whatnot, my grandfather, for one thing, was in a terrible, terrible car accident and didn't die right away. It was a very stressful time, very sad. I should also say my father died of cancer when I was 10, which was another sad thing, except that it was, again, in the Catholic tradition. My family was very involved, not only in the church, but in the community. So it was a very public death. He was only 42 years old, very popular, life of the party, Jomo Kosh, everybody knew him. But if a child's going to go through death, it was about as positive as it could be. Everybody told me, your dad is great. He's going on to... And I bought into that. I didn't think it was stupid. It was terribly sad, of course, and I missed my dad. But after he died, for about 2 or 3 months, every night he would come to me and kiss me goodnight. My mom usually shut or partially shut my door, and underneath the door, first I would see the shadow of 2 feet, And then I would see him coming in. And gradually he just didn't come as often, but I went on with my life. And it's weird, for he died in June, and for my birthday, which is January, someone had given me a 5-year diary. And I was the kind of a child, I was 9 and then 10. I was the kind of the child that would actually write in a diary. and my mom saved that. And it's really interesting to go back and read the entries that I made in my younger self. And a lot of them, again, were very, you know, my dad went to chemo. Oh, and Jimmy Luttrell carried my books home for me. And I was like, kids are so... But again, so I always felt my dad's spirit very close around me in a very positive way. But then in my teenage years, my grandfather went through this terrible accident, terrible disability, which my grandmother did not handle well. And that was a very stressful time. And that's when she started having very, very dark visions, couldn't sleep. And it was also when I was kind of deciding whether I really wanted to do this or not. And so I couldn't not do it. I couldn't not tell fortunes or read palms. It was what I was supposed to do. So I told Spirit, yes, I will do this work. And yes, I want to do this work, but I don't want to see it the way Grandma sees it. I want to genuinely be of service to others, to teach them how to love themselves, especially, and help them uncover and see their gifts and their value in this world. And if that's what I can do through my card reading and palmistry and mediumship to a certain extent, that I would be glad to take that on.
I'm going to jump in for a second. I've got a ton of questions for you. And I might go back a little bit and sure. Then I might move us forward a little bit. I just want to clarify something. So my family roots are from Norway, and that is the very reason why they also came over to the United States, was because they're poor. And my family also, by the way, are my roots of my family. They were tenants working on these poor farms, you know, where multiples would live there together and work the farm of somebody else. And just a few years ago, by the way, I went to find this farm and I found it, which was just, it was interesting. But of course, no one knew of the history except me, including the tenants that were there. But when you're talking about having experiences and stuff like that, were you talking that they were having experiences in Sweden or when they came over to the United States?
Well, both.
Both?
The big thing they always talked about my grandmother, my grandfather was a cabinet maker. And so one day Grandma was, when she was a little girl, was sitting there with her sisters and she says, "Oh my God, Dad has cut off his hand." And their dad didn't cut off his hand. So everybody says, "Oh, Esther, you know." The next day with the bandsaw, he cut off 2 of his fingers.
Oh God.
I know. And she did stuff like that over and over. And like I said, most of her visions were very negative.
Yeah.
You know, she said, "Oh, Aunt Josie's going to die." And the next day she didn't die, but the next month she did. Very unexpectedly. And so everybody then, it really creeped them out, you know, and it creeped her out. She didn't really want to know that.
Yeah.
It would kind of come upon her and she would kind of blurt weird things out.
Yeah. No, I understand that, because when I was age 4 or 5, I had visions in my dreams. They were not pleasant. They were airplane crashes, civil unrest, assassinations, you name it. I dreamt it. And then I would see it on, and you're going to see this when you rewatch this program in the beginning. You'll see me staring at a black and white box television set with the exact scene that I dreamt in my dream the night before. And I had thought over time, because it was happening, you know, whenever it happened, I thought I was causing this stuff. So I didn't want to dream anymore. I didn't want to watch TV anymore, because every time I'd watch it, I'd be standing there like, I just dreamt that. And then, you know, then I thought I was causing it. So, but I agree with you, Joanne, because I've used psychics since, you know, my early 20s. It's almost 40 years for various reasons.
And they can, you know, the ones I dealt with made predictions, but time is a very interesting thing when it involves a psychic reading, because it's not always immediate. It can happen, but my God, if you hear something horrific, what do you do? So there were times when I was younger, I tried to change the outcome by just starting immediately to try to change the outcome of what was yet to happen. But guess what? It happened anyway. And so I can relate to this whole aspect of these flashes, these visions, or these feelings that come to a person. And yet the time element is not always going to happen immediately or even within. It just depends. So that's fascinating and scary all at the same time. Did you find that, did she ever make predictions? Because you worked with your grandmother. I think she was the one. She taught you how to do a lot of this stuff, right? Or honed your skills.
We just kind of did it. It wasn't so much a teaching, but I just watched her do it over and over, and then I did it. And that was, you know, good for her. And she didn't kind of say yes or no. I think she kind of wanted me to decide if I wanted to do this. And she also sensed that if I did it, I would do it in a different way. I was a much more, I was a cheerful little child, even though I should also mention I had a sister that died before I was born. I know my mother went through a lot of, there were other, I could talk all day about, but people didn't shy away from talking about my sister. And so she was always kind of a presence again. And I always felt her. I would talk to her sometimes just like she was real. And she's kind of, again, faded a little bit as I've gotten older. But she was a presence. I always knew that if I look exactly like my father and my father's family. See, and I always knew that if she had lived, she would have looked just like my mother. And so we were kind of two halves of the same thing.
Mm-hmm. I have a question that about what you brought up regarding the past. Well, first of all, I was going to ask you the question because I've been making some associations here, and I'm not sure if it's 100% correct, but I've gone through a lot of trauma. People who have gone through a lot of trauma, some with near-death experiences, all of a sudden find their abilities strengthening, opening, becoming alive, you know. And I've noticed since a very young age, trauma, and I have to emphasize this again, doesn't have to be absolutely life-changing. It can be subtle traumas that all build on each other over time too, and you might not think it was trauma, but it could be. And so for the longest time, I had all these things, you know, happening, and people who experience trauma, including yourself and your mother and all this, you know, some of this stuff can pass down genetically. It just can. And it could be part of the reason, but it might not be the only reason why things seem to light up, or why we light up like a beacon or a Christmas tree. But I was going to ask this one question of you, because you brought it up earlier regarding it was your dad that who passed away, and you saw the you know, you felt him kiss you, you know, da, da, da. Okay, now here's a question that just kind of came to me recently, or an expression, I'm going to say, that many of you out there can probably understand and relate to. So you lose somebody important in your life, and whether it be a spouse, a brother, sister, grandparent, doesn't matter, a friend, and you start wishing that you could see them. Now, I have had there was a recent suicide in my family, and it was kind of traumatic, obviously, but the individual has been showing in a few respects, showing in dreams. I had one dream. The person involved in my family who was married to this gentleman has had a few dreams. He was also seen through when she went through a drive-through, seen from the drive-through window person, that somebody was sitting in her car, asked about. I thought I could have seen, swore there was someone else sitting in your car a moment ago, that kind of thing. And she was like, I don't know what you're talking about. So seen in a vehicle just recently. strong energy that wants to hang around and may be earthbound perhaps, or may not be wanting to cross over just yet. So the wish that came, or the expression that came to me, was, I wish I could see him. And I said back to my sister, I don't think that is going to happen in the way that you think. You've already seen him in your dreams, that you have seen him. But I don't think the way you want him to come back or to be seen is something that you're going to experience. Can you, because you have, you've been around a lot of people, who have, including yourself, that have experienced a lot of this grief or whatever, and especially those that really wish that their person was still here with them and wish that they could see them. What are your thoughts about that kind of emotion?
Well, it's very, it's to be expected. And part of it is from the spirit themselves, of course. Some cross right away and some stick around. We could talk about that for a long time, why that happened. And of course, vision is a very complex term. I am much more clairaudient and clairsentient than I am clairvoyant per se. When I see things, I sometimes hear them, or just it's a feeling, or I work with spirit guides too, I should say. And a couple of my spirit guides are much more visible to me than others. And if you expect when someone passes to see them like they look exactly in life, that's not going to happen. In fact, I don't know if you remember at the conference in November, I think the first speaker talked about his topic was, why are there no fat ghosts?
Oh, yes.
He laughed so hard. And that's because sometimes when the ghosts, in fact, often when people appear to us, they choose their appearance. And so choose their best selves. People that died when they were very old. My grandma, for instance, when she comes back, she's always young and lovely, never old and sick like she was when she passed. That's not how you want to be. Sometimes even as a little girl, she comes to me. And it's, you know, it's interesting that ghosts do that. And a lot of it is their choice. As a psychic medium, certainly, I constantly remind myself that I don't work for those here on earth. I work for those on the other side. And they're going to come through if they want to, if they have a message, if they're able to. Some people, when they pass, I think they go into different states, different dimensions. And so they can't cross as easily as others. Mm-hmm. We also had a suicide, and he was quite young, and he came back a lot. A lot of people reported seeing him in very different ways, some lights turning on and off, some movable objects, and some actually thinking they saw his person for like an instant really quickly. And I saw him, he was more like light to me, usually a glowing of something. You know, and so I asked him after a while, you know, because he was very disturbing to some members of the family who didn't really want him there. And so I asked him, I said, you know, Trav, why are you still here? And he said, Joanne, I just want to help. I just want to help. And that's how he was in life. You know, he really was a person that wanted to love and serve and found life very difficult. So for a while, I tried to give him specific tasks. Okay, Trav, this guy needs help, so you don't need to appear, but you can do what you can do, whatever that looks like. And he was helpful. He's kind of, this is about, 9 years ago, I think. And he's, again, fading a little bit. But if I ever want him, he comes. Mm-hmm. I think there's something he can really help with. And, you know, Trav, these people really need help. Maybe you'd like to work on this. And usually I feel him.
Yeah, you know, when my dad passed away, I was 600 miles away teaching in my classroom at the time, and bizarre things had always happened in my classroom. I'm a beacon. Everyone knows that about me. I attract everything. It doesn't matter what it is. It's going to come to me. And I see, I don't visually see, I agree with you. I photographed a picture in a screened window, not a plate window. There's a difference. A screened window of what appeared to be a young gal and an older man. And the young gal, this is where I learned I was telepathic, because when I developed the film, yes, developed film into actual pictures back when, this was in 2007, I think, I saw what looked like a ball in the upper window, and I thought, that's impossible for a ball to be sitting in the edge. What is that? And then when I got my first laptop, everything, you know, I'm like, wow, this is why I got my laptop, was to blow up the image. And then I realized that it was a little girl looking at me, and an older man above her shoulder looking right at me. He had more of the expression of "Who are you?" And she had more of that happy look on her face, like a young kid always has when they see somebody. But she, when I was on the lawn the next day after I realized this image and said, "What message do you have for me?" And I stared right at that window. What came to me was, the genealogy is wrong. And I just sat there going, the genealogy is wrong. I don't know what you're talking about. And then I realized what they're talking about. Her name in the genealogy was actually wrong. So I matched her with the picture. Yep. And sure enough, but differences are, and I agree, when people come or stick around or come and visit or whatever, and they show themselves in a way, she looked around age 6 to maybe 7, and she died at age 10, 2 miles down the road. And the older man above her was, actually, he sported a mustache. And we, to this day, I'm still wondering if it was her doctor that traveled with her, because he was devastated that he wasn't able to save her when she was dying, or if it was my grandfather who wanted a mustache and everything. Yeah, it's very interesting. But the age, and I've heard this over and over again, of individuals that do show in some respect usually look happier, younger, because they felt better in their younger years. And so that's interesting. And I am going to have a continuous chat with my family member regarding the death of this person in our family, regarding the wishing and wanting of having him around. But you know, you just mentioned something. Someone had said that he wants to help. Yes, but how do they help? They can't physically help if something were to happen. Maybe they can. Maybe they can, hold back or stop a moving vehicle from being hit. You never know. But the thing is, it's like, it depends. That'll be interesting. So that's interesting. So your father, well, my father, when he passed away, okay, he showed in the classroom, but he moved my screen up very, very rapidly, turtle slowly, to the point where it panicked my entire class. They were pointing at it because it was just creepy moving up. And I turned around and I knew he had passed away, or he was just about to pass away. But you can't turn around to a group of students and say, my dad just died. I mean, it's just like, it was hard to, where I was at and the types of environment I was in, couldn't do that. So I'm going to turn this back to you, because my dad has visited periodically. So does your dad visit you periodically still, at, now that it's been many years that have gone by?
Well, you know, not so much unbidden. Okay. In fact, I hadn't really, he died in 1960. That's a long time ago.
Long time.
In my 70s. That was a long time ago. And I just, you know, he kind of is what it is. And since then, I've had a lot more deaths in my life. And then I was a hospice nurse. So lots of spirits. But I went to a group reading. And it was a bunch of psychics getting together, kind of talking. And this one guy was going to lead a meditation for us, which is cool. And he said, okay, we're going to go through these steps, and then you can see somebody on this bench. People, a lot of people do that. And I thought, well, you know, I haven't seen my dad for a long time or thought about him. And so I think I'll see if I can see my dad. And so we went through this, and I got to the garden and the bench, and this is probably going to make me cry. This is always intense. And what I saw was, who comes running through this meadow with this little black and white dog?
Yeah.
When I was 3 years old for my birthday, my dad got me this little black and white puppy. And this dog just adored him. My mother and me, man, they like, but she just worshipped him. He could tell this, it was a little mutt. He could tell her anything and she'd obey. They really had this relationship. And when he passed, she would sit by the door. She sat by the door always until she crossed over too. Mm-hmm. But so what do I see but this dog? And I thought, oh my God. And so her name was Money. I was 3 years old. My dad must have paid a fee at the Humane Society because we got on. My mom says, what are you going to name this dog? And I said, Money. So it ran around. We lived in the country. My mom used to stand on the back porch and say, here, money, 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 money. Not that much, but the dog came home. But anyway, and so then after I saw the dog, very briefly, I did see my father sitting on the bench petting the dog. And I could feel myself also petting that dog. It was a really intense and profound experience and nice. It, you know, people are really connected to their animals. And that was a big confirmation that animals are in heaven too. And they're probably with the people they loved in this life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
totally experience, but very cool.
Now, take a moment here, Joanne, because I know that's pretty emotional. You know, the thing is that people do wonder, and they had wondered. I mean, when my dad died, right? I knew it. I couldn't do anything about it. I was 600 miles away. I just knew it. And by the way, my energy was so high that day that I actually blew a light bulb in my office that just shattered and just completely blew, because I'm full of this really weird energy that I can't settle down once in a while. But the thing is that people always think, oh, they've gone to heaven, they're not going to come back. No, that's not the case. I had a couple different situations where it was obvious that it was my dad. And then a couple years later, including in this house that I live in right now, where I know he showed up during a situation where a decision had to be made, pretty critical. And it was, and what happened was, it's like something went and knocked over his pitcher, which has never knocked over ever since before, whatever, never. And it's like, I knew what that meant. I knew he was providing some kind of opinion about what was going to happen that day. And I said, okay, fine, I get it. I saw it. Yeah, I've got that on film, by the way. So, you know, that's very interesting. So people are always interested in how they can kind of come and go, or with, if they're with you more than you realize. And because people think too that they transform and then they're not themselves anymore and then they just kind of fade away. But I don't know if that's really, the case. What do you think?
I don't think they fade away. I think energy is energy and it goes somewhere, whether it's embodied energy or ethereal energy. And I do think, although we probably go through lives, various lives and stuff, basically a soul is a soul and it doesn't really lose its identity over time completely. So is it changed? Sure, it's changed and it's doing something else. I don't really know what my father is doing now, but he's doing something. Mm-hmm. And it's in a very beautiful way. I'll tell you one thing, I guess that can speak to this. My mother died, my mother and I, of course, were very close. She did remarry. Wonderful guy. He died too, then. I got two stepbrothers. And she died in 1999. Mm-hmm. And I was with her, and I had an extremely profound experience, which I can talk about.
Yeah.
But I'll go ahead and talk about it a little. She'd had cancer twice and survived. I was divorced then. I had two kids, and she lived with us and helped me raise my kids, which was lovely. And she got a disease called scleroderma, which is kind of like MS. It's exacerbating and remitting, so you're fine and then you're awful. And so she, one day my daughter came home and she wasn't looking good and I was at work. Anyway, she went to the hospital and we didn't know if she was going to survive. And she made it through the night and everybody else went home because nobody had slept. And I was sitting with her in the morning. It was on the coast where it was very cloudy. But it was in November, and all of a sudden the sky was blue, and then these clouds came rolling in. And outside the window, the clouds were cloudy, but I could see my father, I could see my sister, I could see my grandparents. About a dozen people were standing there outside the window. They held out their hands. She, who hadn't responded for 12 or 14 hours, lifted up her hands, and I saw this white cloud go to the window, and then she turned to me and she said, "Do you want to come too?"
Oh, geez.
I know. And there was so much love, though. There was so much love in these people waiting and in her. It was tempting. But I said, no, Jim and the kids need me. I can't go yet. And so she passed through, and then the whole sky cleared. It was just an incredible experience. Well, so it caused me to leave my long career as a librarian. I'd always wanted to be a nurse. This is another story, but I was way too emotional when I was younger. And I started out actually in nursing, but I could see things in the hospital. I couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. But I still felt that was my calling. So a couple of months after that, I told Jim, I was always meant to be a nurse. I'm going to quit my job and recareer as a hospice nurse, which I did, and had many wonderful years doing that. But anyway, so my mother had died, and I expected to hear from her a lot. We were very close in this life. We shared everything, and nothing. And I decided that maybe we were giving each other a break, or else she had something to do. But one night, about 2 years after she died, I heard from her twice that year, 2 years after she died. But once, my mother almost never cried. I don't remember her crying when my dad was sick. She was a very strong person. She was a teacher. She taught fifth grade for 40 years. She was a, I went outside and there was a sunset. And I remember she would get emotional over beautiful things. And I heard this voice tell me, "Now I know why I used to cry when I saw the sunset." Mm. And I thought, what a wonderful way to describe the afterlife. All of a sudden you understand what beauty is, what love is, what emotion is. It's just after 20 years, I began to dream about her and hear her more. And I think we gave each other a break. When you're that close to someone and that emotionally involved with them in life, sometimes you need a little break. She needed a break and I needed a break. And I had, the good years, and now she's with me much more often. In fact, it was really funny. You're saying I'm wearing blue today. I love blue. I always wear blue. It's my favorite color. And I was trying on things in a fitting room all by myself. And I just some kind of tops. And finally I decided I tried a couple on. I picked out two blue ones. And all of a sudden, big and loud, I heard in this room, "Oh, for heaven's sakes, buy the red one."
Oh, gee.
So it isn't always that spirits tell us great profound messages.
Yeah, they tell you how to dress too. It's just like, I don't think you look good in that pair of jeans. I want the skinnier ones. No, wait a minute. Yeah, it's that's interesting though. But but the thing is, did you say that you're clairaudient, where you can kind of hear things? Yeah, and it's very. I can hear things too. I'm clairaudient. I'm being directed most of the time when I hear things, which I pass off as my inner gut intuition or something coming from with myself, but sometimes I can't pass it off as that. Yeah, that's interesting about the sunset, though, because I know that there are things that affect people a little bit more than what one would normally be affected by. Or what seems to be more meaningful at the time and whatever. But that's interesting. But yeah, I even asked for a sign, by the way, Joanne, even since the picture tipped over. I had said, I don't know if you agree with this, so I'm going to ask you if you agree with this or not. So there's a lot of people that go to the cemetery. They want to talk with their deceased loved one. And of course, the first thing they say out of their mouth is, "Dad, Mom," or whatever like that. And it's like, no, you got to be more specific, because the whole cemetery is probably a dad or a mom or something like that. So they all come to you like, "Yes, what can I do for you?" If they're there. And so I've been taught and told that you need to say their first, their middle, and their last name in order to be clear about whether or not they understand that you're trying to make a connection with them. So I tried that. I tried it with my dad. And I said, my husband had COVID, so we were sleeping in two different rooms at the time. And I thought, this is the perfect time for me to experiment so he doesn't think I'm a whack job, you know, talking to myself in bed, which, you know. And so I did do that. But it took 2 weeks because my husband still had COVID, you know. And we were separate there. And sure enough, just one morning, I don't know, I asked, if you're around, would you please give me a sign? And I woke up to something pressing down on my shoulder, like touching my shoulder, pressing down. And I was in a dead sleep. And then all of a sudden I woke up to this sensation and I said, oh, is that you? And, you know, and I don't know, what are your thoughts about making contact?
Well, how should I say? Well, first, like I said initially, I tend to work from the other side. And so ghosts don't always come when we want them to.
Right.
They it's their own time too. It's still a relationship. And sometimes when you ask, I also, this is kind of a segue, but it's going to come back. I also found I work best with spirit guides. And I have a number of them. Mine, all except one, are people that I knew in this life that have passed over. I have a very good friend that works with them. She calls them her light team, and they're all more angels. She's never met them, but mine are. And I have especially one, Dee, she's been here throughout this interview. She's very close to me. She was my first boss when I was a nurse. She started the hospice program down in Grace Harbor County, she and her husband, and was such a mentor to me. And she died of cancer a number of years ago. And I hadn't really thought of her much for several years. And another nurse that worked with both of us lost her husband very suddenly. They were sitting watching TV and he dropped over of a heart attack and she couldn't save him, which is hard for someone in healthcare. And I mean, it's hard for anybody, but anyway. And Sherry was very upset because she tried to talk to him. He wouldn't talk to her. Well, I'm sitting in my little meditation room over there, and all of a sudden, Dee, now this was a clairvoyant experience, which I don't very often have, but I'm not kidding. She was standing next to me almost as clear as day. Wow. And she says, I've got a message for Sherry from Eddie. Eddie's trying so hard, but he says, you know, he was never much a talker in life. and he died so suddenly, even he just still doesn't really even know he's dead, and he just can't talk to her. And so I called up Sherry and I told her this, which was very comforting. But anyway, but after that, a couple of weeks later, here was Dee again, totally unbidden. Here's Dee standing there. And she said, you know, I think I could really help you. She says, it's very chaotic on the other side. There's lots of spirits coming and going. Some, you know, she says, so if you want to talk to somebody, ask me and I'll look around and see if I can find them and if they want to talk. And that has helped me so immeasurably, I cannot even say. So having, again, somebody who's in spirit who can kind of be your advocate and helpful on the other side is a good way to work. I have other spirit guides that do other things, but Dee is my soul finder, bless her heart. And she likes it. She likes being helpful. Her whole life was dedicated to helping others when she was alive, and she's still doing that.
You know, I think that's actually fascinating. I mean, do you ask... Do you ask, what if we don't know the name of our spirit guide? What if, do we say spirit guide? Could you please help me? Or how would you go about this? You know, especially if someone wants to try to, I don't want to say make a connection, but or see a sign or something like that. How would you go about that?
Well, not everybody I've known in life is my spirit guide. None of my immediate family are my spirit guides. For various reasons, it doesn't work as well. And I've had, like, Dee just came to me and offered, which is helpful. And I know a couple of other people that I've been very close to that I've asked them, you know, would you like to help me do this work? Or would you like to just help me? And a number of them have said yes. And then some others have come through in dreams. Some come through for a few months. Some, like Dee and Jess, have been with me for years. And it just kind of finds somebody. And then I do have a couple of angel beings, I think. I've seen this red angel, of all things. Hmm. You don't expect an angel to be red. But she's been helpful in certain circumstances. And so you can ask me. And another thing that I heard in a podcast, so these are very helpful, Kelly. And someone say that when they're in the mood to receive messages or feel they're open or have time, they simply meditate and say, if any souls have messages to deliver that I'm capable of delivering, I'm ready and I would like to be of service to you. Okay. And I've gotten several that way, that even without D, that have just kind of come through and said things and that I could recognize them. Yeah. A couple of them are hospice patients that wanted to reach out to their families, and I felt comfortable doing that. I think we mentioned when we were at that conference too, that sometimes people think it's weird if you call them up and say, your dead loved one has a message for you. So mm-hmm. sometimes I phrase it as, which isn't a lie really, because I say, you know, I dreamed about your husband last night, you know, and I just wanted to, you know, say that, you know, I had this dream of such a lovely dream, and I thought you might like to hear about it. And so then they accept that more than, you know, I was out in the backyard gardening and said I was open, and if anybody had a message and there was your husband, not so much, you know, but
yeah, what you brought up is very important here, because there are people out there that actually you would think that they would be well receptive to a message like that. But all of a sudden, I love the way on how you phrase that. Now, I don't know if you could do that to a stranger in a grocery store. Oh, by the way, Bill just tapped me on the shoulder and said, do you know Bill? You know, that kind of thing. Or if you know them, I love your segue into that message. If you know, there's that one show that was on TV for a while, and where the person would literally just go up to a stranger and say, I have a message for you, blah, 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 blah. You know, we all probably know the show I'm referring to. That is a little bit more difficult because we don't know how they're going to react if that were the case, and whether or not they are wanting that message, and of course how they felt about that person, you know, and all that. You know, there's all these factors that involve. Not everybody is receptive to the message. It doesn't matter if they loved them, didn't love them, hated them, or whatever. What are your thoughts about what do you do if you've got somebody, some essence, some energy wanting to share a message, and you know it's for someone you don't know, and you just really don't know how to deliver that? What have you done?
Well, that's one way palmistry comes in handy. And I have, for instance, standing next to someone in a grocery line, thought I received a message from someone, for someone standing next to me. And, you know, I'm not just going to tap on the shoulder and say, your uncle, you know, but I, you know, we're standing there for a long time. And I say, oh, excuse me, you know, I just noticed your hands. I read, and, you know, you have the most beautiful index finger, for instance. And I just wondered, you know, it says that your leadership abilities are strong. Are you thinking of taking a new job? I mean, well, yeah, I was offered, you know, and I said, wow, you'd probably be perfect because you're such a caring leader and you could really inspire others. I've said stuff like that. Not that your mother told me to tell you, because that would be weird. But if I could find another way to identify the person and mention a strength, I've never received a warning, per se. I've always or sometimes there are choices, and you say, you know, this by the by, oh, you know, but I always try to phrase it in something that I have perceived about them rather than someone told me to say, because I think it would be scary if someone walked up to me and told me that. In fact, that's happened to me before. Or a couple of times a client has said, you know, I think I have a message for you. I'm very cautious. Some people have really weird energy. Yep. And so I said, well, you know, I've often said this is not the time and the place to do that. We're talking about you today.
Yeah.
you know, and if I'm supposed to receive a message, it will get to me somehow.
How can psychics all say the exact same thing, but yet the outcome never, and it never did, it never happened? Joanne, do you have any kind of thinking behind what just happened there?
I have several thoughts about that. That my thinking has evolved through time. One thing I always tell people when someone comes and asks me something like that, you know, I've applied for this job, I'm reading the person in front of me's fortune. I'm not reading the mind of the person that's thinking about hiring them. Could I do that? No. Well, I do not choose to do that, okay? I choose to help the person see their perfect path and purpose. So I could say to them, and sometimes, obviously, I do get inklings about what I think is going to happen, okay? And I might say, well, kind of like what I mentioned to you earlier, I can see that as one of your alternatives, but with your tendencies and talents right now, I think this is the talent in your life that needs to be emphasized and where you're more likely to succeed. So if that resonates with that job, yes. And it's also your choice. Just because they call you up and offer the job doesn't mean you have to take it. And our life changes so very quickly. What was seemed like a good thing one day, the next week, there might be something. And I've also gotten another message I have gotten for people is, no, wait, there's something better. No, yeah. Wait. I have told, no, wait, there's something better. Time is the most difficult thing of all when you're trying to answer a question for someone. Will it happen and when? Everybody wants to know when. Usually when I tell fortunes down, we have a store called Phoenix Rising downtown, which is a wonderful metaphysical store. Same lady's owned it since 1987. And she has this beautiful upstairs room where she has psychics every weekend. And I read there at least one weekend a month. Mm-hmm. So I'm reading for total strangers. And I usually do a little palm reading, tell their tendencies and talents, and then I lay out the cards. And usually our intent is that this fortune is good for the next couple months. Mm-hmm. I'm reading for the next, from now until 3, 4, 5 months, maybe into the future. And so sometimes you see things though, and it's variable. But I know one really weird thing that happened to me recently. We moved here almost 6 years ago, mm-hmm. from Olympia, Washington. And down there, I read on Fridays at a store called Psychic Sister. And it was really cool. It was a used dress shop. And the most amazing woman ran this store. She was just an amazing person because she'd founded this business. She gave employment to a lot of like single moms and stuff and all this kind of stuff. Well, I was sitting there one day and it was snowing, which is unusual here. And I saw a vision of her walking down the street and she was hugely pregnant. And I thought, whoa. And she didn't really want children. She was an independent work. She didn't really have a partner. And I thought, whoa, but it was definitely her walking in the snow and she was pregnant. And so at first I thought, I don't know if she wants to hear this, but I thought it was a vision. So I mentioned it to her and she just laughed and said, well, I know you really like being a mom and a grandma. So that was probably a really good vision for you. But she kind of rolled her eyes and shook her head. Okay, this was probably 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. This January, we had snow here in the Northwest for about a week. And it went from up here and down to, she now lives in Portland, okay? She isn't my friend on Facebook, but every once in a while, Facebook offers you someone that you can be friends with. You might want a friend, right? Mm-hmm. I'm looking at Facebook, and there is a picture of her walking in the snow. And she's pregnant.
Oh my, how old is she? Now she should be
she was in her early 40s. So I called the lady that owns the store in Olympia and I said, tell me, I saw a picture of so-and-so. And she said, yeah, she finally met the man of her dreams and she's having a baby. There was a vision. It was the exact same vision, but it took 8 years.
Yeah.
You know, what's that about?
Well, and Joanne, you're not wrong on that because I've had many readings in my 40 years of dealing with psychics or mediums or whatever for various questions. And sometimes the answer to that comes much later than when you expect it to show up.
I thought of two more things to say.
Yeah.
One, I think I watch this with myself. Some psychics try too hard. Somebody comes, especially with get a lot of love fortunes. People come, they want to meet their true love. And you want to help them. You want them to meet their true love. They want it so much. You want to make that come true for them. And so I've seen a lot of psychics try. Well, yeah, you know, I can see him. He's got dark hair. He's like, you're going to meet blah, blah, blah. If I'm really not getting that message, I got to say, I don't know. And yeah. Most psychics, somebody's paid their $40 or whatever. You know, you don't want to say that. But I try to switch it around then and say, but I can look in your hand here. Yes, you're a person who is very good at interpersonal relationships. Yes, you're a person who has a lot of love to give. Yes, your life isn't over yet. And I think someone is coming. You're going to have to be patient. You're going to have to work right now in becoming the person you want other people to meet and they're going to attract. If you do that, do I think you're going to meet the man of your dreams? Yeah, I do. I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through this with a friend of mine who actually, she goes to another psychic, but every once in a while she asks me what I think. And we're such good friends that that's better. And she had gone with a guy and he broke up with her in a very hurtful way. It made my husband so angry because we'd gone out with him. And he says, oh, I hope that we're not going to wish anything bad on that person. It just is what it is. But I kept getting this very positive message about the relationship, although I didn't really want to tell her that because I didn't want her holding out hope when there didn't appear to be any.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't feel that it was bad. So she called me up one day and said, you know, I just got the nicest text message from, and I said, you can go with it. You can go with it. He's come around. He's gone through a lot. And I think you can go with it. And, you know, but so, you know, you just have to. Oh, another thing is I have developed through the years a tell, and a lot of fortune tellers have that. And so when I'm Joanne the psychic, not just Joanne the normal person, you know, and when people come to you with the most, you know, should I date Leonard, even though he just got out of prison and he did, you know, kill his first wife with an axe?
Oh, geez.
Or I say, you know, no, answer to that question.
No, I don't think so.
You know, and so whatever Joanne the normal person, Joanne the mother and grandmother, Joanne the nurse wants to say. But I can't say that. I have to say what the universe is telling me to say. And the minute I start deviating into common sense or myself, I literally, it flicks me hard on my shoulder. And I know, nope, wrong message. I've injected myself or my ego. The main thing about being a good psychic is you get yourself totally out of the way. My grandma told me that too. That is the hardest thing to do, but it's the only way it works. And luckily now they flicks me if I start deviating into common sense, because sometimes the universe tells you stuff that I might not necessarily say, but that's the message the person is supposed to hear.
Joanne has a number of books out on Amazon, but this one is her most current. And tell us about that, and then tell us how people can get in touch with you.
Well, first of all, as far as doing readings, obviously, I live up here in the Pacific Northwest. I do readings over Zoom or over the telephone, and I think they're pretty much equally, they work just as well as in person. I've gotten much more comfortable with Zoom. I want to say also, I think I'm gifted, but also, like I said, I'm 74, and I started doing this when I was about 7 years old. You know, I've done this for more than 60 years. Part of anything you do, I don't care whether you're an athlete or a teacher or an artist or a psychic medium, that's how you get good at it. And I've done this for years and years and years. So I feel comfortable myself. And I also feel comfortable being honest with people. Am I going to make your life decisions for you? No. But I'm going to show you hopefully what your tendencies and talents are, how I think you can do it. And then we do ask the cards and we receive wisdom for whatever situation. And I 100% believe that we will. I feel real confident saying that.
Mm-hmm.
So mostly it's you can get hold of me through my website, which is joannethepsychic.com. Mm-hmm. I also have one called joanneclarkson.com, and that's mostly I do creative writing. I write poetry, Writing poetry has always been my artistic and spiritual practice, and I have a number of poetry books. But
thank you, Joanne, for being on the show today.